You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, yes, we are solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, listen, I'm pleased to have somebody here in studio with me that I've known for a few years. Nathaniel Ledbetter, Representative Nathaniel Ledbetter, has just been selected by his peers as the speaker-elect, soon to be the speaker of the state House of Representatives. So Ledbetter is a North Alabama guy, so he falls right into our listening area. One article I've got here from Yellowhammer calls him a seasoned leader. That Ledbetter entered the service public service arena in 1984. Wow. At the age of 23, became a member of the Rainesville City Council. Later on, went to be the mayor of Rainesville, served there to like 2002. He and his wife are former owners of the Mountain Valley News newspaper up in Rainesville. Spent 30 years working for Sand Mountain Electric Co-op. And then been in the legislature now since 2014. So just, 7 years later, bam, Speaker of the House, Nathaniel Ledbetter. How you doing?
I'm good, Phil. It's good to be here. It's good to see you again. We always had a great working relationship, and it's good to see you.
Well, it's good to see you, and I hope you say that after the show's over.
No question about that. I think you and I have been friends for a long time, and I know that see a lot of views alike. I remember particular issues back when you were in the Senate where I waited to see how you voted a couple of times.
There's a few of us that did that. And then there's a few of us that would look around and go, what's he doing?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I'll never forget one time, Rich Wingo, I voted upstairs on something. I came downstairs right afterwards because it was coming to the House.
Yeah.
And Wingo walks up and just stares at me. And I said, I still love Jesus. He goes, okay. And I walked away.
Well, we still get those now. So it hadn't changed from that perspective, I promise you.
I know. Well, listen, man, I think one of the things that's important is for the audience to know that the folks that serve in the legislature, House and Senate, I mean, I say it all the time on this show, sometimes what happens in Montgomery has more impact on our day-to-day than what happens in D.C.
It does.
But it's normal people. It's real people down there making the decisions.
Absolutely.
You serve with a bunch of them.
I did. You know, one of the things I did when I first ran, and I was first freshman to be elected majority leader for the Republican caucus, and at the time, I had two or three members to call and ask me about running, and it was one of those things where we had a lot of turmoil at that time, as you remember, because you were in the Senate at that time, and we had a lot of changes with the governor and with the Speaker of the House and with the majority leader, and just a lot going on that shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
And so I told my wife, you know, the bad thing about this, it seems like all politicians get put in the same category, and that's just not the case. And it's like I told her, you know, some of the best people I've ever known, I serve with. And so that was the reason I ran for majority leader, was to try to give a platform where, you know, the people really are the people out in the community that work every day at a real job and go down there and try to serve the people. And so that was kind of how I got started in a leadership role.
So when you came on as majority leader in what year did you make that? Third year in, I think?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, 2017-ish mm-hmm. for you? So we had 72 Republicans, and of the 105 members of the House, we had 72 were Republicans at the time.
That's correct.
Do you know what do we have now? You should know, I guess.
We got 77. That cycle, when I was majority leader, we ran that cycle. Of course, as you know, the majority leader kind of oversees the election process for the House side, you know, and for the Senate side. So we had 72 members that were reelected, but we added 5 more seats, which nobody thought we could at that time. But not only that, but this time we were able to maintain them. We actually, for the first time, lost a seat in Montgomery because of redistricting more than anything.
Charlotte Meadows.
Yeah. And Charlotte did a good job, and she worked really, really hard. But the redistricting caught up with her. But we picked up a seat, Dexter Grimsley's seat.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The numbers stayed the same, so we kept 77 members in the House.
Okay. And then you guys had the House caucus meeting, the GOP caucus meeting, Thursday week ago?
That's correct, yes.
And then in that meeting, I know it was you and Representative Klaus, who's been there for a while.
That's
He's
right.
been a budget chairman, which is a position of leadership in the House.
That's right.
But the two of y'all were the ones who put your names out there to be considered for speaker.
That's correct. Yeah, Mac McCutcheon, I think, done a great job and certainly got a lot of respect for and had decided he was going to retire. You know, the only thing I wished he'd waited a little bit longer because the race for speaker actually went on for about 16 months. So I was glad to see it come to an end. But, you know, Steve Klaus is a good man. He's done a good job of service to the state, and I got nothing but respect for him.
Well, all right, and I appreciate that, and I agree. Steve Klaus is a good dude.
Yes.
The position is going to be yours though, mm-hmm. And what I understand, I mean, I wasn't there for it, but what I understand, it was a pretty solid vote in your favor. It was not close. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And that says a lot. I mean, I think your peers looked around and said, well, he's the one we want to have in charge. So. That being said, there you are. And, you know, sometimes it's easier not to be in charge, brother. So are you sure you want this?
Yeah.
Do you know what you signed up for?
You know, that's a good question. After the last 2 days, I've had about 20 meetings today and drove up from Montgomery to be here with you when you had asked. Of course, you know, as a friend, I'm going to try to come on when I can with you. And, you know, I'm excited about it. I really am. I think there's some things that we can do that's going to move the state forward. I think there's a lot of positive, and, you know, we got to be very cautious and careful about where our budgeting process is going to be because, you know, we're not always going to have the kind of federal money dumped into our state that we've had dumped into it. That's certainly changed the percentages that we're reining on our budget. We'll see some downturn simply because inflation has been so high. And so I think we got to be very careful going forward, but I do think there's some things that we're doing and can do that can make a difference. And I think, you know, you and I talked about it before we went on the air. Of course, one of my priorities is education and trying to move it in a direction where we're not at the bottom of the list anymore. And we started at the end of the last quadrennium, Senator Schofield and myself co-chaired a committee of House and Senate members and brought them together to try to come up with solutions that we felt like would start making some changes. You know, one of the things that we passed a couple of years ago was the Literacy Act, and it certainly is moving the needle.
Yeah, and I want to break some of that down here as we go through this this time together. Let me ask you this, though, just before we finish up this first segment, just being a little bit more rhetorical.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say this: you're from North Alabama.
That's right.
And I said this to my audience before we came on. We have a big audience, by the way. Lots of ground we cover here, AM and FM, and people that stream online, and then we podcast it afterwards. So we get a lot of feedback. By and large, though, I know that you guys are going to run it like statesmen. In other words, just because you're from North Alabama doesn't mean the short end of the stick goes to South Alabama. It's not going to work that way. But there are times when that influence can mean something to your personal constituents or, for that matter, to a North Alabama project. Mm-hmm. I just know that for a fact because I've seen it work.
Right.
And it's not like it's undue influence. It just happens. But the vast majority of the leadership positions are all North. In fact, I think Representative Chris Pringle is the only person who was elected to leadership from South Alabama. Everybody else is north of Montgomery.
Yeah, he was the only one. There was one more that was elected to the treasurer of the caucus that is from the Auburn area.
Was that Debbie Wood?
Debbie Wood, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, she'll do a great job. But yeah, we got the Scott Stathagen is from Hartselle, and of course I'm from DeKalb County and Rangeville-Fort Payne area. And so Pringle being from South Alabama gives a pretty good mixture, but most of the leadership that was in the majority is from the northern part. And that's changed. I mean, as you know, in the past that hadn't been the case.
No, it hadn't.
And so I think we are seeing things kind of move in the state. We got a lot of growth in North Alabama, Huntsville, Madison County, and so the numbers are changing, especially when redistricting happens. And so, you know, it's an honor to be able to do it, Phil. I'm honest with you. To be selected by your peers to be in that position is quite a humbling experience, and I'm honored to do it.
Well, we'll see how you feel about 2 years from now.
You're going to ask me that question, aren't you?
Going to catch me. How you like me now? all right, let me ask you this before we go to the break.
Sure.
There are times when a speaker, a person in leadership like this, I've seen it in both the Senate and the House, believes their role is just to keep both sides talking and keep the trains running on time. Mm-hmm. But there's other times when, in that position, you have the ability to influence an agenda and actually sort move things in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
What's the flavor of your speakership going to be? Is there going to be an agenda, or are you going to be just the one who tries to keep everybody on the floor without, you know, throttling each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
But both?
Yeah. No, I think, in my opinion, I think to be a good speaker, you got to do some of both. Yeah, I think there's times when we've got agendas that's very important. I've worked on mental health issue for the past 3 years, and we've moved the needle in that. I think we've got to continue to work on that. Education's something we've got to continue to work on, you know. And we talked earlier about the fentanyl problem. We've got to address that problem. Those issues, we've got to work, and we've got to get them where they need to be. And then there's going to be other issues that we need to let the flow of the floor take care of. But I do think there are some important issues for the state that we need to set an agenda to. And as a leader, I think it's my role to try to put it out in front of the caucus and the members and say, you know, this is really important for our state. And let's see how we can come to some kind of consensus so we can work together to make it happen.
Well, okay. All right. So I would anticipate that. There's going to be some type of an agenda. I mean, the Republicans don't have a supermajority for nothing, right?
That's right.
So we'll talk about some of that in a minute. We're going to take a break right now. Boomer, go ahead and move us to the first break. That went fast. but we'll be right back with Speaker-elect Nathaniel Ledbetter, next Speaker of the House for Alabama, getting into the issues here. What kind of things might we see or not see from a Republican-led House under his leadership? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Back in studio right now with Speaker-elect Nathaniel Ledbetter. He's been serving since 2014, House District 24 up in DeKalb County. We actually used to be in the DeKalb delegation together.
That's right. We did. We sure did.
I had the Crossville-Collinsville area in my district, all of Etowah, all of Cherokee, and then parts of DeKalb.
Yeah, I think the first time I ever met you, Phil, was at a tornado.
Oh, wow.
On the top of the mountain there in your district, I think.
Yeah.
That's been several years ago.
We had a few.
Yeah, we sure did. We did.
I'll tell you what, though, and this is a total aside, but those 2011 tornadoes, you weren't in the legislature then, but I was actually in Montgomery when they were hitting.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't get back home because they shut the highways down. And the time I got home the next day, it was weird, though, because my district wound up being an oasis. The tornado, long-track tornadoes, tracked all the way from Tuscaloosa. And right when they got to my district, they split into two trains, and they went on each side of my district. And my district here in North Alabama became the only place you could get gas for about 50 miles.
Really? Yeah, that was devastating. You know, Rainsville got hit very hard.
Yeah.
And we lost about 32 people in the community.
It was awful.
It was, yeah.
Well, listen, let's talk about some stuff. I mean, we got about 5 or 6 minutes on this portion as we talk together, and I appreciate your time today. But let me just get into some stuff here. Education. And I'll tell you, I talk about it on the show all the time, and I just berate the fact that we're 50th, mm-hmm. you know, we're last in the nation, we're better than that. And do you see an actual plan in place? Here's what we're going to do about education, and will that include school choice, which mm-hmm. is polling super high among Republicans mm-hmm. right now?
Yeah, I think you'll see a little bit of everything. I think there's areas that school choice will be positive, there's areas that school choice won't work. So I think we've got to take a combination of everything. As we talked to you earlier, you know, as Speaker, my number one priority is going to be education. And I think we've started moving the needle some. We do have a plan, and we continue to work on that plan. I think it's revolving as we speak. We talked about it some yesterday, and I think there's some things we've got to do in some of the rural areas, the poverty areas, that we've got to go inside the schools and fix them. You know, when you were there, they passed a thing called the Accountability Act.
Right.
I'm not so sure that we don't need to have Accountability Act for superintendents and for principals. In those schools, it's failing. If you can't get them up in 3-year period, then we need somebody else there.
Why keep your job?
Why keep your job? I mean, and out in the real world, that's not how it works. So I think that's something we got to look at and be really proactive in trying to do those things. I do think there's places for school choice, and I think there's places for charter schools. I had a chance to visit Cornerstone in Birmingham at that charter. Boy, it's amazing what they've done. Absolutely amazing. And I applaud them for their efforts and what they're doing. So I think we can certainly look at that across the state. And, I, you know, my thing is this. I think we do whatever we have to do to fix the problem. And I do think it's working. I'd seen some numbers yesterday on the Literacy Act, and you know, we've moved some counties out of the failing area because of it. I mean, and now we'll do the Numeracy Act to take place this next year in math, and I think we'll see the same thing happen.
So one of the things, though, that has been, you know, a topic of conversation in the education arena across the nation, and you saw Glenn Youngkin get elected governor of Virginia on the coattails of this issue, is parents having a say in what is best for their child's education. We did have a bill last year before, Senator Marsh, who's now no longer there, and Representative Meadows, who's now no longer there, mm-hmm. were both championing the idea of open enrollment, allowing kids to take their tax dollars to whatever school they wind up in, mm-hmm. And giving parents the final say in where their kids go to school. Do you see something as drastic as that being a possibility?
I think it's all on the table. You know, I don't know. You know, I think we got to look and see how it's going to work. The thing, and I read most of Marsh's bill, and I looked at him and I had a lot of conversation about it. Well, I read all the bill, but we, you know, the issue, one of the issues with it to begin with was that the money went wherever the kid was educated. So if you had somebody that taught math in a school system and they wanted to take 10 kids and carry them to their house, start teaching, they can make more money doing that than they could teach it at school. So I think we gotta make sure that the dollar has been spent in a necessary way, so the kids can learn. I mean, right now, something that worries me that I see a lot of is, I think there's some homeschool children that gets a good education. I think it's, the ones that do, it's great. And you and I know people that has done that.
Right.
But I think there are some people that use it so that they don't have to participate in the education system, or so they can set their own daily schedule.
So
that concerns me that's happening.
I get it, and you want that accountability. It's tax
that's
dollars,
right.
So you want that accountability.
Right.
But let's say that we don't have to. Let's say we set homeschool aside for right now. Do you see the sort of the camel getting his nose under the tent with, at the very least, allowing you to go to another school down the road?
I do. Yeah, I do think that's possible. I think the thing you got to be caught, and you got to look at, if you are able to take a child out of a school that's failing and go down the road to one that's being successful, I think that's a positive impact that can have. One of the concerns, this is one of the things I talked to Dale about. Unfortunately, we've got some families that just don't care, and we can't fix that.
No, you're right.
And so for them to move a kid, they probably wouldn't. So, I mean, that's a problem we got to try to fix inside the school.
No, and I totally agree. And so when a school can be fixed, fix it. It should be. I love the idea of holding leadership accountable. If they're not fixing the school they've been called upon to lead, why are they still there?
Absolutely.
And I've seen some amazing principals, and I've seen some duds. But then again, at the same time, I do love the idea of the final say comes back to the parents. And those parents who do care should have an opportunity to care with action.
And so I
love hearing that's a possibility. All right, listen, that was a fast segment, brother. I mean, okay, we got more stuff.
We're talking about important stuff.
We are
right?
talking about important stuff.
Yeah.
But all right. So the first out the gate, I love the idea that school choice is going to be on the table. I think that's so huge. I think the people of the state will rally around it. But in the meantime, we got other things. Tax relief, education is on the table, certainly. Fentanyl, gambling. Mm-hmm. Let's see what else we can talk about when we get back. All
absolutely.
Right? All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, in studio right now with Speaker-elect Nathaniel Ledbetter of the Alabama House of Representatives. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about this show is down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville. I mean, we got to Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden. We got parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. And I'm here in studio right now with Nathaniel Ledbetter. Representative Ledbetter has been serving since 2014 in the Alabama State House of Representatives. He has now been tapped by his peers to be the next Speaker of the House. And we're glad you're here today, Nathaniel. Thanks
so much.
It's
good to be here. Yeah, thank you. I had a busy week and love stopping by and seeing old friends. So
well,
that's good.
When I texted you about coming on the show, it was a week before last.
Yeah, it was tough.
And you said, yeah, if you don't mind, we're going to take a few days off. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Hey, let's keep moving through on some issues. You guys have the next legislative session starts in what, January? You got the organizational session, I guess, first.
January the 10th will be the organizational session.
And that's when you look at new chairmanships and people in leadership positions getting a chance to fill their new roles. You'll be officially elected, I guess, on the floor.
That's correct. Yeah, it'll be January the 10th. That's correct. We'll do the procedure then, and for the pro tem and for the speaker.
And I know, you know, I was able to chair, vice chair, and participate in multiple committees in the Senate, because in the Senate there's only 35 members.
That's right.
In the House, getting a chairmanship is it's a rare bird, yeah. And so I would imagine this quadrennium, we talked about a little bit beforehand, there may be some changeovers, some opportunities for other folks to serve in chairmanship. And you had like a third of the House flip out.
That's right. Yeah, we did. I mean, you know, had a lot of retirements this time. And, you know, we just had some members that was ready to go home. And certainly respect that. We lost a lot of institutional knowledge. But I think we got some good, energetic folks coming in. It's going to do a great job. And then, yeah, you know, the people in between there have served their time. And I think they're rated to move up in leadership. We're going to have the biggest turnover in the House that we've had since 2010.
Wow.
And so I think, you know, we got some smart people and some good folks. It's really public servants. And that, you know, when you're out, from my standpoint, when we talk to people that's interested in running for House as majority leader, when I did that role, you know, really that's what I look for. I didn't look for the politician, the one that's wanting to use that for the stepping stone to the next office. I always look for the person that had served their community, you know, had been in business, had been a leader in the police force or military. Those people always seem to get it, you know, or people that sign the front of the check. I mean, there's a wide spectrum of talent that's coming in, and we've got a wide spectrum of talent there. So I'm excited for those folks that's going to be moving up.
Well, listen, one of the things I know you said in one of the interviews I read as I prep for today's show is that you as a state leader now want to address the fentanyl issue. And mm-hmm. fentanyl is killing Americans like nobody's business. I mean, it's literally causing deaths on an epic scale right now.
Oh, there's no question about this epidemic. And I talked to, used to be, as you know, Alan Treadway used to be the assistant chief in Birmingham. And I had a conversation with him last week, I guess it was. And their death rate on fentanyl is up over 400%.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, it's happening not just in the metropolitan areas. It's happening in rural areas. I had a kid in my district that died with it a few weeks back. I mean, and the thing is, they're lacing that drug with a variety of different drugs. And sometimes they don't even know it's laced with it. So my thing is, Matt Simpson, that serves in Baldwin County, is writing up legislation. Matt's a sharp young man. And has worked for the DA down there. So, I had a chance to sit down and talk with the DA Association. And if there were to be a special session, which I think is a possibility, we're meeting with the governor next week, and I'm going to ask her to put that in the call. I just think it's that important that we let people know if you bring that drug into the state of Alabama, you're going to spend the rest of your life in prison. And we don't have a strong enough law against it right now. And I think Matt's done a good job with it and talking with the DA Association. They tell me they can have that bill ready. Of course, as you know, we'll have to vet it and we'll look at it and see the ins and outs. Probably they'd let the Attorney General look at it and see, get his opinions and thoughts. But I think we've got to make it where the people know if you bring it into our state, there's going to be consequences.
Well, we had Barry Mattson from the DA's Association, and we had Matt Simpson both on the show in the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe this is crisis level. This is the kind of thing that has to be dealt with. And I hate it when it looks like sometimes the legislature has to, I don't want to say knee jerk something, but like we're coming in after the fact. But you don't want to over legislate and then you've done things that weren't necessary. But I'm glad to hear that y'all are looking at taking steps. And I would hope that the governor would include this in the call if you have a special. And by the way, I guess a special would also be related to spending money from the federal tranche that we got.
That's right. Yeah. It would be the ARPA funds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Listen, we got a few minutes here. Let's move to another topic. Tax relief. Speaking of funds, we of course I know that we've had a huge amount of federal dollars. So there is I don't want to call it the illusion, but there is definitely money we would not normally have had. But it's a ton. Mm-hmm. It's a ton of money, and by and large, the legislature left it in the hands of the governor to write those checks, and the bulk of it was spent on government. Mm-hmm. That being said, there are any number of ways that we could provide meaningful tax relief to citizens in the state. I don't mean just a rebate check. I mean like a grocery tax or doing something that provides relief on corporate income tax or something like that that is structural and changes. Do you see that coming? Now, granted, I know we have more money than ever. It may not always be there, but we're seeing more revenue than ever. Our mm-hmm. economy is doing pretty decent by comparison to other states.
It is.
Including the SSUT, the online sales tax, has really been giving Alabama a boost. So what do you see?
No, I think though it's all going to be on the table. I think we'll look at it. I think you certainly will see a one-time rebate. Maybe it'll spread beyond that, and I think that's something we got to look at. I think we got to look at it from a standpoint that we don't want to get back where we was as far as needing money to operate agencies. So we got to be very cognizant of that. I do believe that there's opportunities there. And I think pulling leadership together and with the governor and looking at those opportunities, there's a chance that we could do something. I don't know what it is right now. I can't say. I know we've met about the one-time rebate. I'm certainly for that. I think it's something that needs to be done. I think we've got to be careful on how we do it. The thing we don't want to do is deplete funds we have to operate the state. So I do think there is a lot of opportunities out there and some that we need to be looking at, and I'm certainly open to that.
Well, and I hope so. I mean, like right now, I can just tell you in my study that there's only about a dozen states that tax groceries at all, mm-hmm. and there's only three states that tax groceries at the highest possible level the state would allow, and mm-hmm. Alabama's one of those three. So the entire 4% sales tax that Alabama could levy on something is levied on groceries, which means the poorest among us are buying milk and bread with a tax mm-hmm. on it that they wouldn't have in a neighboring state.
Yeah, and that's not, the thing about it, people, is the poorest among us that gets the EBT doesn't pay a tax. So it's not on that. But I agree with what you're saying. I think there is a method that we could use. Some of those other states might not have grocery tax. For example, we got Florida, we got Texas that doesn't have a grocery tax, but their property tax is four times higher than ours. So, even though a lot of them don't have grocery tax, and I'm not saying that that's the way to go. We looked at that different times. But I do think when you look at all the tax structure, you got to figure out what's best going forward. And there is concerns on both sides on the grocery tax. The city, the state tax average, if you count city tax, is probably 9 to 10 cents. Well, only 4% of that, like you said, was state taxes. So
right. If
you remove that, you also got to have a mechanism in there, as you know, Phil, where the municipalities wouldn't just backfill that. Or you got to put something in there. There's home rule in county government. So, there's some kind of methodology you got to use there so you don't lose it on the back end.
I'm sure there's a means by which that can be worked out. And Alabama, of course, has the split budgeting, which hardly anybody else has. I think there's like three states in the nation that split their budgets
right.
We do, which is a total, just total wackadoo.
Yeah.
But what that also does is, you mentioned property taxes. For the benefit of those who are listening, property taxes in Alabama feed the general fund, and that's kind of a flat tax, if you will. It like stays the same. It doesn't really elevate a whole lot. The ones that go up in a good economy are sales tax, personal income tax. Mm-hmm. When the state's thriving, those go up, and they all feed education. So your biggest fight's going to be the teachers union on anything you do that touches a grocery tax.
Yeah, but we've had progress. We've had progress. And last year, we cut $166 million to the state. To the people of the state in taxes. Part of it was through PPP, part of it was through small business tax. As a business owner, the personal property tax is something I hated. I hated it. I brought the bill the first year I was in the legislature. It wasn't successful because that money was split in so many different ways. Worked out an agreement this year where part of the money comes from the ETF, so we could backfill that to the agencies that it was taking money from. So I think we've got to start. We've started doing some of that, but I don't disagree. I think we've got to look at other ways to do it. I think the small businesses, I think 250,000 small businesses in Alabama benefited from us removing that tax. So that was a a start that I think is positive for our state, and I think we got to continue to look at that.
It was a start, and I don't want to imply for a second that I didn't appreciate the fact that y'all did that, because I thought it was meaningful. I don't think it would be near as meaningful as a true structural tax reform that benefits pretty much every Joe and Jane on the street.
Yeah, I do think there is something we could do for that. I do, and we also did something for the retired folks where the amount that they pay because of the dollar amount increase, they don't have to pay as much. So, as I said, we have started looking at that, and I do agree that we got to continue to look at it too.
Well, let's do this. Boomer, let's take the break about 30, 45 seconds earlier than usual. We'll take that break right now so we can come back and talk about a few other things, including gambling, whether we're going to see a gambling bill coming up in the next legislative session, and wrap things up with Speaker-elect Nathaniel Ledbetter, who is soon to be the Speaker of the House of Representatives for Alabama. I'm telling you, folks, more comes out of Montgomery that impacts your day-to-day a lot of times than what comes out of D.C., so pay attention to who's in leadership. And right now, most of them are in North Alabama, which is kind of cool. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Here in studio, wrapping things up with Representative Nathaniel Ledbetter, Speaker-elect, soon to be Speaker of the House. Hey, thanks for making some time with us today, by the way.
Hey, I've enjoyed it. Absolutely. We had a good conversation, and I think it's good for the one thing I appreciate, I just want to say I appreciate you give people the opportunity to hear what's going on. Sometimes they read it, but it may not be the whole picture, and having a chance to sit down and talk through some of the issues, I think, is important.
Well, and I think they also need to know, and I say this all the time, like, you live in Rainesville.
Yeah.
Just small-town America. I mean, that's right. You eat at the same restaurants, go to the same churches. And by the way, everybody in the House and Senate in Montgomery does that. They don't.
That's right.
They're not on the Ivy Tower. They're not living behind a gate. The majority of them literally can be found and are accessible like any other neighbor.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, I drove my pickup truck to Montgomery today, and if you get in, you're going to have to move the tools and watch out for the mud. So,
right. Good enough. Yeah, I drove a raggedy old Jeep the whole first 4 years I was down there. I had 35-inch tires on it and got no kind of gas
mileage. I remember that.
I literally had to put gas in it to go down and gas to come back. And when I finally got it paid off, I thought, I got to have some common sense car here. So I got a Ford Fusion, and I got like 90 miles of the gallon, it felt like, after that. Hey, let me ask you this, Mr. Speaker-elect. So we're looking at the things that have been pervasive within state politics, and they are constant. They constantly come back up. One of them is gambling.
Hmm.
Gaming. Let's call it gaming.
Right.
And I'm not talking – I'll divide that away from lottery for a moment. Leave lottery on one side, casino gaming on the other. There have even been recent rulings by the state Supreme Court about the idea that it is completely illegal right now.
Hmm.
The bill that was up before and granted, I was very opposed to it. I was with the Alabama Policy Institute. I even came down and spoke at a public hearing in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Becky Norgren chaired that committee, I believe.
That's correct. From here in Gadsden.
And that particular bill was the way it was written would have literally written a monopoly into our state constitution for the same people who have been breaking our state laws for a number of years. And then casino gaming in general has both pros and cons, opposition and supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Is it coming back this year? What first year of a quadrennium is when the controversial stuff always gets rammed through, it seems like.
Yeah, but I, as you and I know, any bill can be dropped at any time by anybody. And will there be one dropped or applied? Maybe. I wouldn't say. I don't think that they will be a serious bill this year. I believe that we got to give these new people a chance to try to look at all the options of what's out there.
Well, that would be novel because a lot of times when the new guys get there, they get slammed into a bill.
Well, that happens. There's no question about that. And you're right. But I think, there's a lot of moving parts to that. It's very complicated. If you look at the state now, it's not that we don't have gambling. We do. A lot of the places are opening now with electric bingo or bingo. And it's to date, the last number I had, we're almost at 30 facilities. So it's not that it's not here. It's the regulation side of it, to me, is the most important part. We have got to do a better job in putting bills together to make sure that those that are out there illegal, you know, are not operating. And as you alluded to, the Supreme Court has just ruled on some of that. As you also know, there was an executive order signed by Bentley.
Yeah.
So that kept some of them open. So I think there's a lot of moving parts. Do I think that we'll see something that would probably pass this year? Probably not. I think it will be a conversation that will continue to be had. I think, you know, there's also people that live in the districts where there's casinos at that really want to try to help move the needle. And I get that. But I think looking forward, we got to figure out what is the best thing for our state. And the governor has got to be engaged in that. The House and the Senate's got to be on the same page. We've got to clean up some before we can fix it.
Well, and one of the things I think is too often overlooked, and there was an article that I had as part of my resources, I think it was on yesterday's show, is that the sheriff of Jefferson County literally says he does not intend to enforce the laws on those gaming halls. He says he's got better things to do right now. Now, granted, apparently better things to do doesn't mean lowering the murder rate in Birmingham, because that's not happening. The sheriff of Jefferson County is, of course, not just Birmingham. He's got the whole county. Right. But the reality is this. Enforcement of what's already there would be very helpful, and that's a local law issue, and I don't know what to do about these local law officials that won't do their job.
Yeah, I really don't either, and I don't know that the state has got enough personnel to go in and try to shut down local facilities all across the state, so that is a problem, and it's part of the issue with the complexity of this piece of legislation and the bill. But at some point in time, we've got to try to fix it, or they're going to pop up everywhere. And me, for one, I don't want to see that. I mean, so I think there is a method. I just don't know how we get there right now.
All right. So, but in your opinion, you don't think we're looking at a major gaming bill for this first session coming up at the Quadrennium?
No, I didn't say that. What I said was...
You heard him, folks. He said it.
What I said was, I didn't think it would pass.
Gotcha.
Anybody can throw any bill out.
And they will.
And they will.
Yeah.
But I don't think anything will pass this year. That's what I said.
For folks who don't know, you can drop in, and I'll attest to that, can drop in a bill every day of the week.
That's right.
And you can have some wing-ding bills about you're only allowed to name your kids John or something. Who knows?
That's right.
But not everything gets through the Rules Committee on the floor and to a vote, and even then doesn't have the votes to pass.
That's right. I mean, as you know, we have about 1,000 bills to 1,200 bills a year that's actually dropped, as we call it, and we'll pass about 200 or 200 plus. So, and that's kind of how it weeds itself out.
All right. Well, Speaker-elect Nathaniel Ledbetter, House District 24, soon to be Speaker of the House. We appreciate you. Thank you for being here in studio today.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it. I look forward to coming back.
And you are welcome back anytime.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'll ask you even harder questions next time.
That's fine.
You better settle in, brother. It's going to be a four-year ride. But you've seen it up close and personal, so you know. And I do know, by the way, Charlene and I called that our full-time, part-time job, and I wasn't the pro tem of the Senate either.
So you
got your work cut out for you.
We did.
Blessings on you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Do good, man.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, Boomer, I know we're going to the break right now. We're going to come back in a minute, folks, and I guess I'll go to number two of the Triple Dipper. You think, Boomer, am I going to get all three? I don't
know about all three.
But maybe.
We'll see.
This is sort of like the speaker where he says, well, everybody can drop a bill. But it won't pass. I think we're looking at a double dipper of the three today, if I had to guess. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Third hour coming up.